Greg McAlisman, the 4th of October 2021. Two great Australian Patriots on the show today. We have Carly Bartlett and we have Michael Greg Griffith. They will bring you up to date on the situation over in Australia. We have heard some good news, of course, that Gulag Gladys, former Premier of New South Wales, is gone. She's gone, Berger. Ding dong, the witch is gone. Is Dictator Dan going to be next? Victoria sure does hope so. Saturday's events recently held around the country saw people in their thousands turn up at their local locations, not wearing masks, not social distancing, like true patriots who finally realize, not finally, some of you have known for a long time, but others are now waking up that the whole thing is a rort. The whole thing is about power and control and corruption. So let's hope New Zealand politicians and personalities start falling by the wayside, because we're finding them out too. Because here's one thing. The adverse reactions of the jab is becoming more prevalent, and it's almost impossible for the government to keep a lid on that. Think about that. Please, we implore you, if you have stories about the carnage being caused by this experimental witchy poo brew, tell us, come to air, show people this isn't a figment of others' imagination. Just because mainstream media won't report on it, just because the government wants to keep it suppressed, the government's in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. We know this. We know our government's as corrupt as hell, bought and paid for by the CCP, and I've said it before. Jacinda and Labor and all these other parasites are so far up the arse of the CCP, you can only see their shoes. And yes, they are red with little yellow stars. So please give us the information. Come to air. Make it known. Show everyone else they're not alone. And those of you who have got a bit of buyer's remorse for taking the jab because you've been suffering despite calling other people idiots for believing otherwise, we know it's not your fault. A lot of people are taking it simply because they have no choice, or they think they've got no choice. One chance, one term, one time. Right here, right now. We can do it. Remember, always question everything and you'll find the answer. And always ask yourself, like I say, who benefits? Who benefits by you believing their bullshit? Anyway, on to the interviews, and let's see how we roll. I'm sure you're going to love what these patriots have to say. Talk soon. And joining me via Zoom from the across the ditch in Australia, of course, we've got Michael Greg Griffith. He's a playwright at the Wolves Repertory Theatre Company, hosts Cafe Locked Out on Facebook and YouTube Live on 7:30s. At 7:30 on every night.
Every night.
Working hard. We also have Carly Bartlett. She's the co-founder, CEO of Digital Talent Group, serial entrepreneur and a social change advocate, also a public speaker and a published author. So we have some, we have the goods here. Okay, we'll start up. We'll open up with you. Michael, actually, we'll go to Michael first.
Sorry, Carly.
But we'll go with Michael. Michael, if you could just tell the audience, because they'll be new to you, if they're not following the Melbourne issues over there, just give people a quick rundown of how the hell you got into the situation and what's next.
Okay, well, I'm a really rare fish in Australia. I was surviving off my contemporary plays. One of them was a suicide prevention play called Marooned, which the Australian Army was touring to their bases, and other plays. I was just about to have Bruce Beresford direct one of my plays. So I was on the precipice of some real good fortune. Then all this thing happened with COVID, and that all took, we all basically bunkered down for the lockdown. When it initially happened, I thought it was real. And I was right into it and saying, yeah, okay. But as it progressed, I started to have my doubts. And then when they started talking about segregation and mandatory vaccinations, I started doing some rants about it. And then one day, there was so much pressure to be silent. And I was told by the artistic community, if you keep talking, your career's finished. But I have children and I'm really concerned for their future. So instead of going silent, I started a show called Cafe Lockdown, but now Cafe Locked Out, where for 1 hour every night we talk freely and I get guests on and we just have an open discussion and people comment on it and we discuss their comments. And it was literally done as a safe place to protest. I didn't think it would go I didn't think what would happen with it, but within 3.5 weeks, we're reaching 1.2 million people, and it's going through the roof on YouTube and everything. And I think it's highlighting the fact that there's a real need for people to have critical thinking, discussions, debates, talk about this, because we're having these enormous changes happening in our lives, and we're just basically told to stay silent and comply. And so this is how we're fighting.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we're all concerned about that. And the fact that you guys are getting it so damn rough over there. We've got it easy compared to what's happening over there. I mean, they haven't started shooting us with rubber bullets and everything yet, but I bet that's coming. If you guys buy into it, they'll definitely franchise it to us like they do with everything else. Kylie, you're a woman. It's quite rare. You're a woman in Australia in the movement, pushing back and doing what you can. Over here in New Zealand, we have the woman actually leading the charge, and the soy boy, limp-wristed dick males, they're actually doing nothing, really. There's only a few of them out there, but the females are actually leading the charge. Yet it's different over there. It seems the men are at the forefront. So how does it feel to be like one of the minority in terms of gender? Because I only believe there's two, by the way. Pushing this, doing the pushback and taking, and you've been in the amongst of it, haven't you? Right in the thick of it.
In the battlefield. So before I kind of unpack why I'm here, what I'm doing, how Michael and I know each other, is I think it's important to appreciate that I have not ever been a protester. For me, you could probably tell I'm very glamorously dressed. I would consider myself at one stage to be a capitalist. And so for me to be in this movement is really unusual and a big shock to my community. So the backstory to me, this is my 30th year of being self-employed and in my own business, so I ain't no spring chicken. But I've always had most of my career has had this strong education, training, development agenda. I started a registered training organisation, an RTO, when I was in my mid-20s. You call them polytechs over in New Zealand. And so I had a national office and a satellite office in New Zealand for about 10 years. I could see there was a GFC coming in around that 2007, so I decided to put my business on the market. I'd scouted it, and I successfully exited. So here I am, cashed up, but I'm the CEO of nothing, and I'm like, what do I want to be when I grow up? All I know is training and education. My background is in neuroscience and behavioral science in the context of communication. And someone said to me, why don't you jump on Facebook just to keep your brand in front of people? And I'm like, face what? Like, what's this thing, Facebook? This is back in 2008 when Facebook was really only 2 or 3 years old. And so I jumped on it really just to keep my profile in front of mind. And before I know it, as a serial entrepreneur that I am, I then started rolling out workshops around Australia and New Zealand in teaching people how to use social media to build their brand and build their business, make more sales. So then I got picked up by an agent, and I got on the speaking circuit internationally for the last 13 years, became a published author. And then I decided, you know, I came to that stage in my life, that big 5-0, which was in July 2019. And whilst I was earning incredible money as a speaker, you know, $10,000, $15,000 for a 1-hour keynote, you can get quite seduced into earning really good dollars on the speaking circuit. But then I came to this realization, I had that kind of, what's my legacy going to be? And I found I was trading my time for money, doing a lot of coaching, doing a lot of speaking, but I wasn't leaving a legacy. And if, you know, if someone was to read my obituary out, would I be proud of what I'd achieved up until that date? And I said no. And I realized that there was a really big problem in Australia and in New Zealand, where we've got a lot of digital youth, the digital generation, who are born with a phone in their hand but don't have the business skills. You've got business people that have got business acumen but don't have the digital skills. And so I came up with this grand plan on a piece of paper. Imagine if I could create an ecosystem where we brought our digital natives together with our digital immigrants, and I became the conduit where I started then looking after the more disadvantaged, whether they be unemployed, youth, women that are out of work now because of COVID, which COVID hadn't happened at the time. And so I then have gone back into becoming a registered training organisation again. And then my whole premise was around a social impact organisation where we could start to help those disadvantaged and unemployed people to show them that there is an opportunity to forge a career in digital. So off I go on my merry way. You know, I'm standing on stage in Sydney in February 2020, pitching to raise $1.5 million in capital to really get the social impact arm of the organisation up and going. And this thing called COVID hit. And so all of a sudden, investors' money were off the table. We find that we now own a registered training organization but can't do anything with it. And then the phone started ringing off the hook from small businesses that had been put into the first lockdown. They hadn't been on social. Kylie, can you help us out? You've got a thought leadership approach to it. You've got a strategy around social. So I launched my agency arm of Digital Talent Group in March 2020, where I was recruiting team, recruiting clients all over Zoom, helping them use social to stay front of mind while their businesses were shut down. And that kind of leads us to where we are today. I've now spent the last 18 months in the trenches being an activist for pro-choice and using my voice as, I guess, an ambassador for small business owners that are really on their knees, in particular in Melbourne at the moment, as a result of these crazy conditions that we're being put under. So that's kind of leads us to where we are today, Calvin. That's my backstory.
I'm just letting that permeate in my mind for a moment. That's quite a resume, I must admit.
Yeah.
Tell me something. how did you actually, let's find out how you two met, because you're both on here. You're both from the same area. You've both been in the trenches and you've both taken the hits, albeit probably from different angles. How did you meet and how did you get here before we start unpacking why we're all here?
I'll start it off, Kylie. Yeah. I had been to protests before, but not many, you know, and they're all peaceful. But I went to one protest here in Melbourne, basically against the lockdowns and against vaccine passports and that stuff. And I took a sign with me that it said, Australia, land of the free, as long as you do as you're told. And I came across the front line. There was police I thought were pretty aggressive, but it wasn't until I reached Flinders Street Station where I was in the front line that that's where the real Rukshan got pepper sprayed, that I saw police aiming these weapons at these young men. I'm not sure what they are. I know people have said what they are, but they looked like rifles. And and the young men who were portrayed as aggressive were more outraged that they had these people aiming weapons at them. Like, what are you doing? You're our brothers. You're Australian, you know? They were just... Anyway, all hell broke loose and I got pepper sprayed and I ended up... And I knew the police were coming. I ended up walking up Elizabeth Street completely blind. I was by myself. I couldn't see a thing because the pepper spray was so bad. I bought water, but it was just making it worse. And then someone grabbed my hand and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I can't see." And that was Kylie.
Oh, well.
It was like, I'm out of goosebumps. So I got pepper sprayed as well, but I was about 10 back from the front line. So it was nowhere near as aggressive in my eyes as it was in Michael's. And I just so vividly see this man literally blind in one of our main streets of Melbourne, in Elizabeth Street, just completely disoriented because he couldn't see a thing. And people were running, you know, to save themselves because the police were charging down at us with these rifles and the pepper spray. And I grabbed Michael's hand and I said, "Hold my hand and I'll get you to the side of the footpath." And then some people ran into 7-Eleven and grabbed some milk and we're pouring it in Michael's eyes. And he's like, "I can't see, I can't see." And we're trying to get his head back to get it in his eyes. And finally I could see he was having a little bit of blurred vision. And there was the people, there was thousands of us, were trampling and running. And so I made sure Michael was okay on the side of the road. And then I continued to run away from the police before the second lot of bullets were
so allowed. I never met her. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know who any of the crowd were. Finally, I think there was one young man I opened and he gave me his top because he said, "Look, your top's covered in pepper spray." He gave me his top and I wandered off just trying to take it in what had happened to me. Then at another protest, the day of the bridge, where we took the bridge, early on in the day, we were with a small crowd and Kylie's there and I'm just standing with Kylie and we felt like we knew each other. It was really strange, but she didn't recognize me without all this stuff on my face. And we just started talking and wondering what's going to happen today. And then I mentioned, "Oh, yeah, I was blind on Elizabeth Street. Someone saved me." And then Kylie said,
"That was me." And it was in that moment that I was standing next to Michael. This is last Tuesday when we had our really big protest, and Michael started talking about his story. And it just, I had this, like, my life flash before my eyes where I went, you're the man that I helped on the side of the road. And the, you know, to be standing next to each other last Tuesday, not knowing each other, but yet knowing each other, you know, that's where I believe your humanity and the universe has got your back. And we were meant to stand there. And ever since then, Michael, we spent all day together at the protest on Tuesday. And
walked Wednesday. All the way up to the bridge, right the way to the top of the West Gate. Yeah,
we'll
it was amazing.
We'll unpack that and how that happened. But that, so that's the irony. Michael and I have only known each other really since last Tuesday, but we have this incredible connection through the human spirit of helping out. Like, that's what Aussies and New Zealanders are known for, helping your neighbour, you know, being, going into combat and making sure that you're protecting each other.
Calvin, just back to what you're saying about mainly men, that's what's happening in the media. But in actual fact, on the ground, I tell you, it's 50% men and women. There's a lot of old women in the crowd. Remember that woman we met? It's like in late 70s. A lot of old women there. Yeah. So it really is back. The crowd, the actual crowd. What we're doing on Cafe Lockdown is interviewing real protesters there so people can see the real people that are there and not just the way the mass media is portraying us. So yeah, but there's very few like... there's very few like my friend here. She stands out.
Yeah, we just had a problem because this is what happens when you try new tech. Now, we've got a camera that actually has a bit of a filter. It makes me look good, I must admit. But now we're in full view of the world, and this is me really. So I've lost my tan, as you can see. Next minute I'll be a white supremacist or some crap that the media spews out. You know what they do, eh? Every time you say no to the government, You're a white supremacist. You're a far right extremist. You're all That's these right. bloody things. It's just ridiculous. And over here, what you were saying before, well, that's good because and you're right. When the chips are down, we always come together. If there was a bridge between Australia and New Zealand, I tell you what, a lot of us would have been running over there to help you, because we were gutted to watch what was going on. Absolutely gutted, and we believe that. The whole thing, it's a worldwide plan. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I've had that from Americans too. I've had Americans contacting me and say, mate, we could have got across there. We would have been coming across. This is people, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's right. So what's behind Dan Andrews and people like that? These clowns are bought and paid for, eh? They've got to be. There's no way anyone would do this to their own people without some sort of recompense, without some sort of payoff, because he can't, surely he can't be that as thick as a brick and actually devastate the economy. People are working their guts. We used to be working their guts out just so they could afford to be broke, just to get by. No one had enough time to stand there to try to reason what was going on because they were too busy working. But they've been forced into a situation where now they have nothing. And as you know, if you've got nothing to lose, you'll go balls out. And there's like the tradies over there. The thing that you have over there, we had here, is that we're sectionalized. No one will come and help the tradies because they're not being targeted. But as soon as they get targeted, no one wants to help them. They don't realize that if we all, because we are the many, they are the few, if we just stopped and said, that's it, no, and just shut the place down till the government gets out, that'll be gone. They'll be gone tomorrow. But no one's willing to do it. There's only a few pushing back, and I cannot understand for the life of me why. Any ideas?
Yeah, I do it.
I'll go. You go, Carly.
I mean, how macro, micro do you want me to go on this, Carly? I mean, I think, again, for me, having a neuroscience background, I struggle with what people are fighting about because they're not seeing what it's attached to. So what's happening in Australia, in particular in Melbourne, Victoria, is it's very clever that they're using all these Trojan horses like COVID and the vaccine to distract the commoner from actually uncovering what's really going on. So I witness on a day-to-day basis people fighting over vax, no vax, pro-choice, mandate, and that's exactly what the government wants, because it then you're so caught up in that you're not able to just extract yourself out to see the bigger picture. So when you, in context, when you appreciate that this has been in the planning for decades, you've only got, it's in within plain sight if you go on the World Economic Forum's website, and you see the 2030 agenda, you understand that there's a new world order. Even our mainstream media are using the word new world order. We've got politicians, health professionals using new world order. And if you go and do a little bit more research, I think critical thinking is a lost art. And so when you look at this, is about the global elite. It's the Faucis of WHO. It's the World Economic Forum. It's Klaus Schwab. It's Bill Gates. It's Soros. And if you follow the money trail, that leads back to what's going on. And so what where people are struggling in Australia is, if one politician's corrupt, okay, if two are corrupt, but how could they all be corrupt? You're a conspiracy theorist, Kylie. No, I'm not. There's a conspiracy that they've all come true. So what I think, I'm a fortune teller, not a conspiracy theorist. But so if you appreciate that there's probably 30 layers before it gets to the puppeteers in Australia, and Dan Andrews and Gladys Butterchicken in New South Wales and Anastasia up there in Queensland, they've all been groomed for this. They probably don't even know how high up the tree that this goes, but there's a lot of money involved in it. And so all the big tech, the big pharma, have promised big lumps of money, billions of dollars, if you follow this narrative. And so, and then when you combine that with natural megalomaniacs, dictators, fascists like Dictator Dan, it makes sense he's going to gravitate towards this narrative, because he's already corrupt and corroded and evil at his soul, that he's picked up this new world order and gone, bring it on, mate. This is exactly what I am wanting to be able to push on the people of Victoria. So whilst I don't think the pollies in Victoria are entrenched in the new world order that's going on in America and in China, they are definitely the executors of this plan. And so when you can have a conversation at a macro level and understand the agenda that's been going on for decades and decades, it then allows you to step back and go, oh, okay, so this isn't just about the pollies. This is a bigger play going on. And this whole COVID Trojan horse people think, well, you know, if I just comply, if I just do what I'm told, if I just follow the health orders, we'll get our life back. What people don't appreciate, and probably more so in New Zealand because they're a lot more asleep, is that this won't be the end. This is the beginning of the digital vaccine passport, which then opens up into the social credit system, and you will have no freedoms. So again, it's mind control, Kelvin. It's complete mind control. And I sit back, you know, with my popcorn going, oh, well, this is interesting. And you see that, well, this whole mask has got nothing to do with stopping the virus. This is about muzzling people 1.5 metres apart. Don't talk to each other. Let's lock you down again under a curfew so you can't compare stories. Let's beat you down, put fear into you, and when you're in a fear state, suggestibility becomes heightened, and then we'll throw you a little present. Like today, we're now allowed to drive 15 kilometres, not 10. And people are putting all over Facebook, what a great day for Victoria. I'm from Melbourne, we can drive 15 kilometres. I'm like, really? This ain't a great day for me. And so I see it very, very clearly, because I'm a natural challenge the status quo and a critical thinker, but the sheep are so blinded by it, and they think if they comply, they'll get out, and it's through the being complying that they'll never get out of this.
That's a pretty good explanation, actually. Michael, do you want to add to that?
I'm going to go another way. There's because I'm open to that. We interviewed a politician from the upper house of Victoria yesterday, and she was stating that the politicians are too disorganized for that. She reckons they're just making it up as they go. Dan has, as we know, about 89 people just working on his media staff. But I'm trying to look at it from what I can actually see and touch. And what I see and touch is like one of the last protests where Kylie and I ended up at the shrine, in the morning they had this bear cat, which is like an armored car driving around, men dressed as anti-terrorist SWAT teams, leaping off and firing indiscriminately on the crowd without warning and doing it constantly in order to terrorize us that we either get arrested or we just go home. And the people didn't go home. They kept coming back. I got shot in the hand. I had numerous other people I met who had been shot in the head and the back and the legs and everything. And it's, yeah, and the whole day you're spent baffled. Like, what are you doing? Shooting on your own people? What are you doing? And then we got to the shrine where they could have blocked us and they didn't. So I don't know if they wanted us to go there. But we went there hoping that they would stop shooting at us because we thought they wouldn't have the audacity to shoot at unarmed protesters protesting for freedom, which is our right, on the shrine, only to find out later in the day after I was on the steps, I got arrested there, that that's what they did. They lined up like just a line of an execution squad, and they just fired at all these people in the back as they were running away. And it just breaks my heart. Even now when I think of it, I'm just like, how can this be condoned? I mean, it's just, I'm trying to come at it from a spectator's point of view without all this thing, even though a lot of it makes sense to me. That's how I'm trying to do it from a writer's perspective of writing down what I see, what I hear, and trying to make sense of it that way. But it's all I keep coming back to is evil, whether it's evil that good people are doing or whether it's evil that bad people are doing, it's evil. And the most beautiful thing I'm finding is the connections people are making, like Kylie and myself, which almost have a spiritual connection, because you really feel that it's a simple battle of good and evil. I know that sounds very simplistic, but that's what you feel. You feel these on the steps. To tell you this amazing story, there was a group of us that's on the steps that said, no, we're not going. You want to arrest us, you arrest us on these steps. This is a shrine celebrating freedom. And if you want to rip us off here with your stormtrooper things, your stormtroopers, you can do it here. You know what I mean? We're going to win the moral argument. And this Greek man next to me who worked in a quarry, he asked me if I believed in God. And I said, well, you know, I left the church years ago. But this morning I said, before I came, I actually prayed to God to allow me to have no fear as I move through a valley of darkness, because you just felt in your heart that's what you were going to see. And he had a piece of paper and he ripped up this for me when the police were like 2 meters away. And he said, hold this, it'll protect you. And he made me this, which I've got.
Wow.
And I did hold on to that in my hand as the police were bouncing on my head.
Okay, Jacinda Ardern, you haven't been tested on these sorts of trust issues that Bill English has been confronted with. But if you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying. We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
Different people now say Jacinda Ardern told them that Donald Trump mistook her for the wife of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It sounds a trifling matter. Did you tell people that Donald Trump mistook you?
I told people that, yes, someone had observed that I'd been mistaken.
But that's not the story they gave us. They didn't say someone got it wrong and thought accidentally that Jacinda Ardern had been mistaken. They said Jacinda Ardern was mistaken, and Jacinda Ardern told us that she was mistaken by Donald Trump.
And it's quite complicated.
It's not. It's actually not.
Okay.
Did you say to Tom Sainsbury that Donald Trump mistook you for Justin Trudeau's wife?
I gave him a short version, which was in behind the scenes at the Music Awards.
I know. What was the short version?
The shortened version was that there was some confusion over who I was, observed by someone else. I believe I told him the full story.
You believe you did?
I believe
I did. Two people now say that you told them that you were mistaken by Donald Trump. I know this seems like a trifling matter, but what I'm suggesting is that, and now that you are a world leader, all of these little things can blow up to be big. And if you are giving something that is not the entire truth, it can confuse people.
No, I'm sharing this story here.
Did you say that confusion was someone else's confusion, or did you imply that it was Donald Trump's confusion?
I said there was confusion over who I was.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
So it's quite a remarkable, spiritually deep thing going on in our city, that from my perspective.
I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to the fact that it's like the world's a chessboard and there's two entities playing chess and we're the pawns on it. And there's a few of us, however, on that board who have become self-aware and making our own moves, much to their dismay, because it's obscuring the game a little bit. I noticed that over in Australia, I mean, no one wakes up one morning and decides, right, I'm going to go shoot some unarmed protesters, especially when it's not the first protest you've been to, and this sort of thing doesn't happen all the time. Having a bit of a background and knowing how these things play out and knowing their playbook, exactly how they're doing it, exactly how you said, Kylie, and even yours, Michael, lends to it as well. These people have a specific mindset. They are activated by instruction. They then carry those out. They have no humanity. That's why they will remove often your local community cops who are part of your families. Yes. They'll move that out to a different district and they'll bring others into your district who have no synergy with you. And they're the jackboot thugs who will just work to instruction, like I said, and carry out the plans. There's also massive financial incentives behind it all. This is an absolute fact. Over here, for example, to give someone a swab, they make $120.
Yeah, same here.
$300 per jab.
Yeah, same here.
And $10,000 to set up these pop-up bloody
jab clinics.
Jab centres. Yep. To go on a jabathon all day.
Yeah.
So who's going to, when the rest of the economy shut down, and they're pulling people from the community? I mean, you can give a jab and have 5 hours of training. Yes, you don't even have to be a medical doctor or nothing. And then, I mean, Jacinda Ardern has locked us down several times. Now, you guys, of course, like you said, you got the gold medal in that at the moment, and the severity of it, it's huge. But she continues to lock us down for an absolute load of crap. I asked through the Official Information Act, and we've had a lot going. These people cannot tell us if there's actually a virus. They cannot tell us if it's been isolated, because it hasn't. So therefore, how are they testing for it, and how are we getting cases of something that they can't tell us that actually exists? That's the first point. And this is from their own words. They don't have the information. I asked the very people who tested it. They don't have the information. Well, hang on, you just tested it. We've got computer modeling, like those ones that come out of the Imperial College of London over the climate change crap, where we're all meant to be flapping around on our lawn now, sprouting gills, which never happened. Same thing here. Otago University seems to be the center point of all this confusion and this rubbish coming out. One particular university, yet the Auckland one's speaking out. So, and they're having a discord. But I find, and you've probably got the same thing there. Have any of you sought through the Official Information Act requests and that as to what the hell's going on? Give us the facts, because at the moment we have none to justify any of this at all.
So if I could extend on that, Calvin, and again, it goes back to context. The Trojan horse was COVID. And so because that's already flawed in its existence, everything else that comes out from there is flawed as well. So the PCR tests, it's been categorically said that they're not the best way of evaluating or assessing whether you've been infected. But people keep lining up in their tens of thousands, like the figures that are released every day of 60,000, 80,000 have lined up to get their test. Well, if everyone just stopped getting tested, then the cases would go away and we would be through civil disobedience, which Australians aren't good at doing. But again, when this all first came out, a little similar to Michael, I at the start was going to comply and follow the health orders, but it just didn't add up. So I went down and did my own research and found that The vaccines are still a clinical trial until April 2023. So we are partaking in a medical experiment. This is not a proven vaccine. I have had vaccinations throughout my life, like a lot of us have had. But I'm sorry, this is not about me being an anti-vaxxer, that is for sure. I'm about pro-choice. And Michael says this so beautifully on so many of his podcasts, you can't put freedom and mandate in the same sentence. It just doesn't work. And so for me, it has become less about the vaccination and more about the choice and our freedoms, because if we don't have freedom, we have nothing. So again, everything that's coming out is flawed. I don't believe the stats on who's died of COVID, with COVID, how many are in isolation, tier one sites, tier two sites. I've not worn a mask for 18 months. I've got the stupid text of, you know, go self-isolate for 14 days because you've been in close contact. I've done none of that because I trust my immune system. And before this, the flu, if you got it, I've had it once or twice in my life, you would self-isolate. You wouldn't go near the vulnerable. You'd, you know, get vitamins and look after yourself and get sunlight. And so it's just crazy. And people are having the conversation around something that's already flawed. And once you get that, it allows you to be armed. Like Michael's saying about they're not police. The people that are on the streets in Melbourne with these rubber machine guns and the military coming in on their trucks are a part of the United Nations. They've been in training on our soils for many, many years, waiting for this moment. They don't have an attachment, as you said, with the local folk, Kelvin. So when you know what you're playing with, it allows you to get a lot more clearer and a lot more strategic in how you're going to battle it, as opposed to my senior Connie down at my local police station, surely he won't shoot on me. No, because that's not who you're dealing with here. So when you know what the enemy is, it makes it, for me in particular, a lot easier to navigate through this shit show. And we are in the battlefields, and this is a war. I don't care what anyone says. You don't have bombs coming out of the sky to appreciate that we are in a war. This is a genocidal psycho warfare that we are going through. And if we don't stand up for our diggers that Michael so rightly put on the shrine that gave their lives in Australia and New Zealand for our freedom, who are we to bend over so readily and give up freedom that our diggers fought and gave their lives for? And you just need to know what you're playing with in order to get strategic in how you're going to civilly disobey them. Off my soapbox.
You know, I do the same thing. When I get hot under the collar about something, I go on my rants as well. Believe me, you watch past episodes, you'll see that playing out ad nauseum. The parasitical worms that we have, that they laughingly call themselves honourable politicians, they're just political whores who have sold us and the country down the river. And I make no qualms about that. You guys do have a couple of good ones, though. All of ours, I mean, there's one guy, who's the leader of the ACT Party, Seymour, his last name is. He's a commentarian. I call him a commentarian. He pretends to be a libertarian, but he's a bloody commie, you know. And he's all for track and trace and all that sort of stuff. Well, that's not exactly libertarian, is it? And our politics is in complete disarray. We only have a two-horse race, much like you guys had over there for a while. And these new ones coming out now are threatening, like Clive Palmer's one and Bossy's one and that coming out. I'm surprised they don't join, because they would be an amazing force.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they joined up, that'd be government forever. Especially if they keep true to what they say. But yes, you know, that test remains to be seen. Michael, what have you seen on the political front? And how many politicians do you have that actually are genuine in their intent to stand by the people and actually hold others to account?
Well, there's a guy in our Victorian Parliament, I think he's the head of the Social Democrats or something, who's doing speeches. I have been basically disconnecting myself from politics, apart from the Clive Palmer group. I'm dealing with a Rod from, is it Australia One Party, who's been on a few times. But I find I don't get them. I see them coming out with the rhetoric they're coming out with. And it's like the different human beings and they're seeing a different world from what we're seeing. You know, the big thing for me was when they pepper sprayed, they knocked down and pepper sprayed that grandmother on the, you know, in the Q protest. and the politicians have come out blaming the protesters or saying that she's a, the protesters dressed up a man instead, which is just all ridiculous. We know her now. Her name's Mary. She's a Croatian grandmother. And she went there to just see what the protests were about. But by not prosecuting those police officers, you're basically saying our morality now includes brutality. We're okaying that. And in that's the line in the sand where your community's never going to be the same. That's how you become a far more brutalized community. And the way that the why I stood up for Cafe Lockdown, the way the welcoming in segregation and the basically telling, like Jackie Lambie's speech, which was no different from telling the Germans to go attack the Jews and break the windows in the Jewish shops. This is what they're doing. We've had 20 years of anti-discrimination programs, anti-bullying, and now the government's thrown that all away and said, see, these people here won't take the vax. They're the problem. Do hate upon them. Hate them, shame them. The only thing they haven't said is be violent against them. And yet when there is violence against them, like there was against that grandmother, they say nothing. And I've been to a few protests, one in Northcote, and then a friend of mine was in St. Kilda, where small groups of young people mainly come together to just basically walk for freedom. And swarms of police come down in these, in all these stormtrooper outfits. And they don't just terrorize those people, but the entire community. They're in the skate park with the young people. There's, I've got a friend who took a video, and you hear a woman going, what are you doing? You're terrorizing the children. They're doing that on purpose. That's telling the whole community, don't you dare try to raise up and go against us. Yeah. And that, to me, is the rise of totalitarianism and a police and they're using the police to a police state to install it. And that, to me, is going, why are we going this way? And the only thing that makes sense is, one, they're either doing it because the power's gone to their head and they can't stop themselves, or there's a greater agenda where they've prepared for all this, like you're not allowed to protest, these emergency powers that they've given themselves, you know, that so they can do whatever they want. Now, today, why I'm upset today is YouTube is going to take down anything that questions vaccines across their entire platform is going to be removed. Now, the other CNN is not going to do anything in Australia on Facebook, because if you have a platform in Facebook, you are now liable for a comment that someone can put on your platform. And all that is about silencing, coercioning, terrorizing. And I know in my heart that the Australian public and the world's public don't want this, because the soul wants freedom. It wants unity. And the economy needs it. If you've got a cafe and 30% of the population can't come in because they're not vaccinated, that's 30% of profit down the toilet. So as our economy comes, we need everybody. And all of that is discounted for this hate that they're selling to the world, just hate. And it's destroying everything good about Australia. And so I'm not an intellectual where I know exactly what's going on and this. But what I can see as a spectator is they've put fear in the driving seat of the community, and it's taking us somewhere where we don't want to go. And the only thing we can do to stop that is we have to remove fear and put courage there and go, no, we're not going that way. You work for us and you're sacked because you're crap, and we're going another way. We're going back to where being Australian meant something. And where, so, because the most wonderful thing that happened now, twice it's happened to me, but on the steps, I don't know if Kylie was there. I think she was around the corner. We sang the national anthem.
I was
and
there.
You've never heard the national anthem of Australia sung when you're surrounded by stormtroopers who are fiddling with their batons ready to break your heads. And these Aussies, all different ages and sects, and all stood up and we sung that song, and it meant something. And that's why they were so aggressive to us, because they knew it. They knew they were in the wrong. They knew they were the bad guys. And that's why they were so aggressive. But even though they were aggressive, We weren't scared because we thought you can't beat us. Doesn't matter how much you beat us on the outside, we won on the inside for this particular battle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yep, that's true. See, over here, I mean, surely if politicians were really in charge, because to me, they take their marching orders from abroad. I'm telling you now, all bought and paid for. The ones in charge are anyway. Because look at Jacinda Ardern, okay? She doesn't mind that she sold us out to the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, because that's who we're getting most of our money off to just to survive. And what is she doing for that? She's basically mortgaged the country to the pricks. And she's on $7,000 a week, plus her government perks, while the rest of us can't feed our kids. So yeah. They don't give a rat's ass about her. She goes out there pretending she's, you know, the team of 5 million that they paid about $6 million to some PR company to create for them and all these other slogans to brainwash people. But for years, since we were younger, we were taught obey command, do as you're told. And everything was about order, everything about control, about staying in your box, don't dare question and all that. And if you regurgitate in a prescribed manner what we brainwash you with, then we'll pat you on the head, give you a degree, put you out in the world. You know, otherwise, if you don't, we'll incarcerate you until we beat that stuff out of you. What's next for you over there? Where to from here? And actually, I hear that there has been some hot off the press news. If Kylie, you'd like to fill us in on that, maybe you can actually add some sort of ray of sunshine to the dark cloud that's looming over us all.
Look, you know, Michael and I have a very different energy around this. I'm very resilient and high and hold such a strong belief in humanity that, you know, we're getting trolled, I'm getting arrested, you know, police is coming around to my doors, I'm getting stalked, I'm getting all this going on. But what I do believe is that we are, at the moment, we're not here to be liked. We are here to lead humanity in the greatest awakening this planet has ever seen. And so in order for us to see the light at the end of the tunnel, we need to go through the tunnel. So I'm holding it together in terms of this is all part of the plan and we need to go through it in order for the Earth and for the planet to wake up. Back to your point about breaking news. So we've, as Michael pointed out, you know, Pollies, Labor Liberal, I'm calling them Lib Lab, National Greens, all the same as far as I'm concerned. We do have some independents rising up like Clive Palmer, Craig Kelly, a couple of them, Malcolm Roberts, Ricardo Bossi. There are a few that are popping up. But we've rarely seen it from our traditional sitting in Parliament Pollies until recently. So last night, Tanya Davies, who's a Liberal member in New South Wales, revealed information to the Australian people. If you go onto the Fair Work Commission website in Australia, you'll find it. And what has happened is that all these mandates are coming in because the average Joe Blow didn't have the uptake on the vaccine. And Aussies are lazy by nature. So even if they wanted to have the vaccine, they kind of couldn't be bothered. And so they bought out all these mandates and they started cherry picking off the industries. And the reason the crescendo hit last Tuesday is when the CMFEU, which is our construction trade union, said you've got 2 weeks to be double jabbed or you're out of a job. Well, as you rightly pointed out, Calvin, get out of the way of a man who has nothing to lose. And so that was the crescendo in that industry said, we do not consent. And the irony that won't come out in the media is that 50% of the tradies that I've been hanging out with since that protest last Tuesday have all been double jabbed. And the reason they're still protesting is that they know that it's poison. They know they don't want to do it, but it's the only way to protect their kids so their wives can leave their jobs to homeschool the kids so the kids don't have to get jabbed. Like, these guys are warriors prepared to sacrifice their own lives knowing that they're taking a poison. And then when they're told, like, now can't go to work, even though they sacrificed to have the jabs, they went enough is enough. And that's where it started. And then, of course, we've got other industries like the teachers and the paramedics and the police all being told you've got 2 weeks to be double jabbed. And so it was a really defining moment yesterday where Fair Work Commission was given an opportunity to review and write a report on what is going on through these mandatory vaccinations within industries. And they've come out yesterday, who Tanya Davies, who's a Liberal member of Parliament, and she's done a Facebook Live saying, hang on, there's some damning evidence here. It is not, it's not a vaccine. It's still in clinical trial. You cannot mandate that you have to have a vaccination to be employed. And so it's really opened up, I guess, a can of worms in that employers and businesses that were so readily going to discriminate and sack people. As of today, the nurses in aged care had today to get double jabbed or they'd lose their job. And this came out yesterday to say, no, hold the line, you actually don't. And so that you can download the 44-page document on the Work Commission website in Australia, and there's some pretty damning evidence. Go to about page 37 onwards, and there's a whole heap of recommendations and a whole heap of this is not a vaccination and it's discrimination and it's not a part of WorkSafe, that you can now mandate vaccinations to be employed. Very big win for the people around exposing the corruption that's going on within Australia.
Brilliant. It was extraordinary. And everyone shared it. Like my messenger was getting bang, 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 bang. Everybody was sharing this thing. So the vast majority are silent, but they don't want this, what's coming, yeah.
And it was all the industries. You know, we had a silent protest a couple of days ago in Melbourne where the nurses and the paramedics sat in a park silent, were saying no jab, no job, we do not consent. And they weren't causing any violence, sitting there, legs crossed with their sign and their mask on, 1.5 metre. And then the troops, the what do you call them, the stormtroopers, literally came in and shut down the silent protest. So I'm just, that's a little win for us that those poor, mainly the paramedics and the nurses and the teachers that now have got something to fight for their jobs for, because they were looking down the barrel of this weekend of being unemployed.
While that protest was happening simultaneously, over 1,000 people were marching to the MCG to celebrate the Demons' win, not policed, not social distancing, totally allowed. So any dissent is just pounced upon, you know. What I see happening now is we have a David and Goliath battle, and they've got all the media, they've got all the money, they've got all the weapons, they've got the police. But what they don't have is they don't have a future that anyone wants. They don't have a product that anybody wants. They're forcing it upon us, but nobody wants it. And we, on the other side, might be David, but our stone is hope. And that's what people want. That's what people want for the future. They want hope. They want freedom. They want unity. They want love. That's what we have. And that stone is very, 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 very powerful. And they can have all the stuff in the world, but we all know that story. So it's not a done deal. It's a what I've been telling people is hold on, because we are on the right side of history, but we are just a long way from home.
Do you find the cognitive dissonance and the Stockholm syndrome that some people have with the state? You know, the state is like an abusive relationship. They're the ones abusing us, and for some reason... For some reason, yeah, we're hugging them or we're protecting them. And we went on a couple of protest actions where we reported on them on Wednesday. And the amount of people, we saw the trolls who were sent out to, you know, abuse and all that sort of stuff. We just laugh at them because they're clowns. But the people who are just locked in a mesmerized, you know, they're just... They have no way of seeing through this facade. Like the illusion has been pulled down over them so tight, it's been nailed into the ground and they ain't getting out of it. And you can give them facts and figures all day long. You can show them the harm it's been done, but it just does not matter. I've had people say, well, I'm in the healthcare industry, so I would know if there was something wrong. Would you really? You know, I don't think a bloody mopping out the toilet counts, you know?
They very cleverly said once we hit 80%, everything will go back to normal. And most people don't like conflict at all. If you're in a schoolyard, you might have two people fighting on, and most people will pretend, but they won't actually fight or they'll run away. Good majority of people do not like conflict at all. They'll get away from it. So they've seen 80%. They thought, okay, I buy it. I'll put up with everything to the 80%. And it's easier to hate the anti-vaxxers because they don't have the weapons, they don't have the guns. Just give in. So that's the way they're going. And the reason the facts don't matter anymore is it's like you buy a car. When you're buying a car, you're waiting to, you know, you do a bit of research. But once you've bought it, you don't want to hear all the things that are wrong with it because you've already bought it. So yeah. The people who have done the jab or have decided that we're waiting for the 80%, they don't want to hear anymore. They don't care about science. They've now, though, what I'm seeing, and this is what I'm hearing from England and other places, they're going the booster shot, but I've already done your 80%. You know, I've already done this. So I think, but my fear is by the time they get that far, it's too late.
Yes.
It's too late. You've already given your freedom away because freedom is not a status. Freedom is a natural right or is a thing that we fought. It's not ours to give away. Our grandparents and great-grandparents wrenched it from the powerful through protest, and it's our ward. It's ours to enjoy and ours to hand over to the next generation. It's not ours to hand over because we're momentarily scared. And that's a weakness in us. And my real, real fear is by the time they wake up and they realize, hey, they're not giving us our freedoms back, it'll be too late. And it's going to be your kids or your grandkids that are going to have to come together and fight this tyranny. Because once it's established, people say, oh, it's all falling apart. No. You get Romania, you get the USSR, you're talking 40, 50, 60 years of tyrannical rule before it finally crumbles. And that's what you're gifting to your children and your grandchildren, you know? And yeah. It's cowardice. It's short-term cowardice. What we need to do is we need to pause, talk, discuss, critical think, and then think like farmers. What do we want to plant now that future generations can enjoy? And they don't want it. They don't want tyranny. They don't want it. So we have to do what we want to do now. The people I was with, these young people on the steps and every protest and Kylie, they all know that the fight is now. This is it. This is the crossroads. Next year may even be too late. This is the crossroads now. This is where we decide on the future of both of our countries and the future sort of basic, you know, what they are, what New Zealand is, what Australia is, and where it's going. And we can stop it. We are the majority, but we have to rise up and say, no, we don't want what you're selling us. Go away. We're going to find another way to deal with this. That's our only hope.
Absolutely, because it is ours to defend, like you said. Freedom was entrusted to us through sacrifice. Mm. Only the other side is now trying to take it back, wrestle it from us. So it's ours to defend. And
that's right.
And the problem is we're a little bit forgetful, you know, because I've said more than once when these politicians stand up at all these epitaphs around the country come April 25th, and they talk about the sacrifice people made for freedoms while they're down in Wellington, of course, bringing in the back door with our people died from, you know, coming in the front and telling a whole lot of lies and codswallop. And they have the nerve to parade and pretend. And I just find it, I find it a kick in the guts, to be honest.
And it is. This is the very difficult time. This is not a time we are not in good shape. We are not organized. They've separated us by, you know, houses. They've separated us by the masks. That's because we could go to church, other places, we'd start talking and we'd start organizing and we'd get peaceful protests and find ways to actually work against it. That's why they're separating us, so we can't do that, divide and conquer. That's what's going on. Why it's going on, I don't know, but that's what's going on. And what's at stake? What's at stake is everything that is good about us. That's what's at stake.
Yeah.
Kylie, jump on in there. Pearls of wisdom, please.
Oh, it's really, it is that divide and conquer. And you know, I've taken a huge risk in being courageous and speaking up and standing in sovereignty and using my platform to spread the message. It has definitely divided local communities right through nationally, globally. You know, I've lost every friend of, you know, 20-odd year relationships. I've lost my dearest, dearest, most important person in my world. I'm a single mother and I've got a 21-year-old son who's wants to disown me, change your name. I'm embarrassed. What are you doing? And, you know, I keep saying is I'm not doing this because of who I hate in front of me. I'm doing this for who I love behind me. And as Michael says it so beautifully, this is about what are we handing over to the next generation? And I'm buggered if I'm going to roll over. I'd rather die on my feet than be down on my knees with no freedom. And I'm lucky that I'm a very courageous person, but what it's doing to small businesses, you know, the construction site, and Michael and I spoke about this. On that day that we took over the freeway, and I'm not sure if people in New Zealand appreciate the significance of what we did there, there would have been about 10,000 of us, and we'd been shot at and pepper sprayed, and we took over the freeway, closed down the traffic. Unfortunately, there was a disruption for a couple of hours, and we walked up the Westgate Bridge. Now, the significance of the Westgate Bridge is it was the bridge that was built that joined the West and the East together, and it did collapse in its building, and 35 tradies lost their lives on that bridge when it was initially built. So for us to walk up that bridge with those tradies, they were not neo-Nazis, they were not right extreme people like me, or every person day and night, walks of life, but these tradies, the protection that they had for us women, they were putting their bodies on the line to make sure we were being looked after. And Michael and I, we're trudging up this Westgate, and it was a 25-kilometre walk that we did. And I, being the superficial woman that I am, was not dressed for a trek, you know. Like, and we're clumping up this, and Michael's standing next to me going, "You can do it." And I know this is going to sound very melodramatic, but I'm like, what's a couple of blood blisters on my feet for our diggers that were in the trenches and gave their lives? I can do this in not appropriate clothing. And Michael and I, again, and it just so happened that we'd always pass each other and find each other in these protests. And Michael and I were walking up this Westgate with our hands in the air with all these tradies singing the national anthem. And we both said to each other, "I haven't felt this free in 18 months. The police couldn't get to us because they did get to us after it, but they couldn't. And we were so free. And there was truckies getting the tradies to jump on the back of the trucks to take us up the bridge. And it was one of the most incredible moments of my life to see that this is what it's about. And the people coming together and those construction workers, honestly, they were not right-wing neo-Nazi extremists. They are your backbone of this country, and it needed the construction industry to take a stand or we'd be fumbling along a little bit like New Zealand. And for Dictator Dan to shut down the construction industry for the next 2 weeks until they get jabbed, every week we are shut down in construction, it's $1 billion it's costing our economy. So this is massively, that what is occurring in Victoria is we are spending money that we don't have. Small businesses are never going to open again. You see, for lease signs out the front of businesses that have been around for 40, 50 years, we are a broken state. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to swear here, but I have tried subtly for 18 months to wake up the sheep, to just ever so slowly give them some information. Bugger the sheep, I am here to wake up the sleeping lions. And I'm at a stage now where we've given you all the information in the world. If you choose to bury your head in the sand, I really hope you make it. But yeah, for me, time is of the essence and we need to wake up more lions.
I have a different take, Kelvin, before.
Yeah.
I've been in Australia since I was 5. And up to now, compliance and silence has done us well. You know, when the refugees were coming and they got them on Manus Island, even though a few people were protesting that they shouldn't do that, everybody else just looked away, silent and compliant. And so it's done it well. The government's done the dirty work and we've prospered and we've got fat and we've got houses. Now houses have grown big and we knew we were the lucky country and people wanted what we have. So we've never, ever, ever, ever had to fight for anything, really. I think when the Australia card came up, we did a few protests. We did a thing. We won that through a legal loophole, but we've never had to fight. And now it's realizing, and they're all hanging on for that 80%, hoping everything will go back to normal. They want to believe that that's going to pay them. But now I think they're sitting there going, There's two schools of thought. There's the people that have actually gone, okay, yep, we're going to be a totalitarianistic state. How do I adapt and survive in that state? Because when the Nazis took over France, only 10% were in the French resistance. 90% just acquiesced and got on with the Nazis. So there's that mob. And there's the other mob that are just holding back, going, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. And I'm hoping that at some point they realize, okay, yep, there's nothing I can do. I've got this job. I'm going to have to lose the job. I'm going to have to lose the house, the mortgage. Everything I've fought for and worked so hard for is gone, because everyone at the march has given up lots. I work with a man who's lost 6 businesses and he's fighting now for the future of the country. It's realizing, yeah, you've got a great job. I've got a great this. My kids are in schools, but that's going to come at a cost that I can't pay. And we have to change. So it's slowly getting people to wake up to either you want to go with the totalitarianistic system or you want to help the movement that's going, no, we don't want this. So I'm not sure that it's simple sheep switched off. I try to just understand from a playwright point of view why people choose why people make the decisions they make. And that's my feeling on that.
I'll cover a few of those things off, because you guys said a lot, and I tell you what, that makes a lot of sense. And I guarantee everyone watching this will identify with everything you've said. If they think 80% is going to be the magic number, they can forget that right now. Look at Israel. Israel's proving that beyond a doubt. They've mm-hmm. got to their 80, 85% actually, and most of the people dying of other backs.
Yeah.
Yep, and now they're up to their fourth booster, second booster after the double fourth jab. So that's four injections. So that's not working. In fact, the so-called variants, so-called cases are getting worse. So I've always said that if there's any pandemic, it'll be the jab that drives it, nothing else, because that's what creates it. Create fear, make you run for the jab that they want you to ultimately get, lock everything down until you do and remain compliant. So that's that. So forget your 80% people ain't never going to happen. If you do get there, they're going to push you and keep changing the goalposts. Secondly, if you ever realize what freedom feels like at the point of a gun, where you actually just turn around with nothing to lose and say, you know what, get stuffed. That right at that point, that precipice there is when you will feel the most enlightened, the most free, the most energized, and the most useful.
Tiananmen Square is a perfect example.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's a great example of when you've got nothing to lose, that freedom. And there were people like that, the protests that Michael and I have been to, literally sitting there with their hands in front of the police, which were very intimidating, going, I don't care. I'm free. I'm free to do this. And I think it's going to need a Tiananmen Square, without being too melodramatic, that is going for people to go, enough is enough. You know, my freedom is worth more than anything that you could be promising me through this 80% target.
Yep. Yeah. So just before we wrap up, I'll get you to give in a moment. I'll get you give how people can follow you. I know we can follow Michael, of course, on the Cafe Like the Other Thing at 7:30 every day on Facebook and YouTube. So you can watch that. I'll get you in a moment, Kylie, to give the same. But for people who want to know how we got here, I'll tell you, it's quite simple. Piecemeal. We got here in incremental steps, incremental erosions of your freedoms and rights. And you did nothing. And the people that did go to step up, it's quite easy. It's like having two armies come together on the front lines. They all agree they're going to fight the next day. Someone in the night comes along and pays everyone just enough to feel good. And I guarantee no one turns up the next day to fight. And that's exactly what's been happening. Bit by bit, those who start chirping away and causing a problem, they usually get bought off or intimidated. And that's the end of the pushback. And that's how we got here, because no one stuck together. Competitive rivalries, taking over community spirit. We'd rather rob our neighbor's garden than help them tend to it and then share in the bounty later. That's where we are as human beings right now, and that's where we've got to get back to community.
Yeah, good summary, Kelvin. I totally agree and concur. And I do believe in humanity. I do believe humanity will prevail. The truth will come out, as the truth will set you free. But I'm about uniting people together as well. And let's stick together instead of this divide and conquer, because we just feed into what they're looking for. So to answer your question, how can people find me? I've used my personal profile to really drive this message home, as opposed to my business. I'm trying to kind of keep my business separate so it doesn't get completely destroyed by this. But if people look me up on Facebook at Kylie Bartlett, on my personal profile, not my business page, And then there's a follow button. You can follow me. And then also they can reach out on Messenger for a link to my Telegram. I do have a nice supportive group on Telegram where it's, you know, encrypted, it's safe, it's uncensored, whilst we know that there's some bots in there and some police watching us, but it is a lot safer and a lot less censored than it is on Facebook. And please reach out. I'm encouraging anyone that this has resonated with and want more information or just want someone to talk to. Like, I'm not exaggerating, I'm getting about 2 or 3 hours sleep a night. And when I'm not doing interviews like this or running my business, I'm just making myself available for people to reach out. And if it's an event, if it's a download, if it's to give me some more information, because I've got so much strength that I've got enough to give to the masses. Like, that's my biggest gift, that use my strength and I can send you information, just support you, put you in touch with other groups so that we end up staying together united as opposed to being fractured, which is what's been happening.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And Michael, apart from Cafe Locked Out, 7:30 Live, Facebook and YouTube, so I'm plugging away for you. Where else can people follow you?
Just look me up on Facebook. At the moment, there's no theatre open anyway, and I don't really care about that. At the moment, I'm just focused on giving people a place, a safe place to protest, which is the Cafe Locked Out. You can come and discuss there. I mean, I'd say it'll probably be shut down at some point. But at the moment, I'm on Facebook. It's on YouTube. We're on BitChute, and we'll be moving to Rumble and any other platform where we can keep going. Get in touch with us. We'd actually like to get people on from New Zealand to get an Anzac spirit going, because what's happening here is happening there. Especially we want to talk about how they're going to start inoculating the children. So you say someone can have a 5-hour course to learn how to jab someone. Well, that's someone with a 5-hour course can also decide that your 12-year-old is mature enough to know what they're doing when they decide to have the jab, and all you can do is come and watch. And I think that's something that, as parents, we have the right to discuss, because over here, to perfect example is the right for the gay marriage. That was a plebiscite. We had a community plebiscite, which is like a watered-down referendum. It was fought for ages and finally won. Over here now, they're bringing in segregation, mandatory things, no community discussion. And so at the moment, we're not being treated like this is our community. We're being treated like this is their community, and we're basically prisoners within it. So at the moment, I'm just on there, and I'm willing to do interviews. I'm willing to join groups. I'm willing to help any way I can to peacefully protest and help in any way I can with writing skills or any way I can to rally against what's coming. So if you need help, please get in touch.
Brilliant. Any final words, Kylie? Because I know you're a wealth of knowledge, and I'll give you a couple more words before I wrap up and
The only thing I want to say is just hold the line. And we've been saying that all along. Like, we are in the battle of our lives, it's a very spiritual battle as well. And just hold the line and know that if you don't have the courage or the capacity to go and rally or protest, civil disobedience. That really, that's the one thing you could do, is just be civilly disobedient. You know, if you don't wear the masks and don't obey, and you don't have to be doing what Michael and I are doing, dodging bullets and getting out there in the trenches, but just, you know that hold the line. We are going to win. Humanity always does, but it's going to be a rocky road. And just reach out to your fellow man, woman and child to support you through that, and hold the line. We've got this. We will win.
Okay, Jacinda Ardern, you haven't been tested on these sorts of trust issues that Bill English has been confronted with, but if you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying. We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
Different people now say Jacinda Ardern told them that Donald Trump mistook her for the wife of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It sounds a trifling matter. Did you tell people that Donald Trump mistook you?
I told people that, yes, someone had observed that I'd been mistaken.
But that's not the story they gave us. They didn't say someone got it wrong and thought accidentally that Jacinda Ardern had been mistaken. They said, no, they said Jacinda Ardern was mistaken and Jacinda Ardern told us that she was mistaken by Donald Trump.
And it's quite complicated, Jack.
It's actually not.
Okay.
Did you say to Tom Sainsbury that Donald Trump mistook you for Justin Trudeau's wife?
I gave him a short version, which was in behind the scenes at the Music Awards.
I know. What was the short version?
The shortened version was that there was some confusion over who I was, observed by someone else. I believe I told him the full story.
You believe you did?
I believe
Two
I did.
Two people now say that you told them that you were mistaken by Donald Trump. I know this seems like a trifling matter, but what I'm suggesting is that, and now that you are a world leader, all of these little things can blow up to be big. And if you are giving something that is not the entire truth, it can confuse people.
No, I'm sharing this story here.
Did you say that confusion was someone else's confusion, or did you imply that it was Donald Trump's confusion?
I said there was confusion over who I was.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
Just tell them, this is very simple. I said that this, you cannot have, if you have mandatory and freedom in the one sentence, freedom is a lie.
Yeah.
It's that simple. That's the battleground.
Couldn't agree more. And for those of you others who are still on the fence, just stop attacking the people who are standing up for even you, because you're either too gutless or uninformed to do it yourself. Yeah. So, and go to a dictionary, look up the word patriot, and you will find Michael Gray Griffith and Kylie Bartlett in there amongst others who are willing to put themselves in the firing line to protect the rest of you. Go Anzacs.
Anzacs. A really lovely, great interview. Really appreciate
Thank
your time.
Thank you.
You guys are most welcome. We will get Thank this you. All done up and sent out, and everyone Beautiful. Will be loving it, trust me.
Beautiful. Thank you
very much.
Stay in touch. Thanks, guys.
Stay sane. Bye.
Yeah.
See you later.
Great to see the Aussie Patriots standing up for truth over there, and the relationships they build is amazing. You're coming together, people are establishing new relationships built on trust, mutual respect of the truth, something mainstream media doesn't want you to find out about, obviously. Speaking of mainstream media, let's have a look at the mainstream media compilation by Coronavirus Plushie on the events that happened on Saturday nationwide. Don't believe the hype of the media when they tell you only a few people turned up. You know how it is, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 could turn up. They'll take an angle that makes it look sparse, and then they'll say a couple of hundred people turned up. We know that's complete and utter bunkin'. So check this out, and I'll see you on the other side.
Thousands of anti-lockdown, anti-vaccination protesters gathered around the country today. And what was a major breach of COVID restrictions. In Auckland, about 1,000 people gathered at the Domain, many ignoring the organisers' call to mask up and scan in.
I think people should not bother with face masks.
Police deliberately took a low-key approach to the event, arresting no one. Edward O'Driscoll reports.
You could hear the roar from a mile away. Dozens of bikies descending on the Auckland War Memorial. The massive crowd waiting for them was just as loud. About 1,000 people gathered to protest against the lockdown. These so-called freedom fighters more than happy to break the level 3 rules.
One has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws.
Somebody's got to stand for what's right.
They chose a park bordering the city's biggest hospital. 6 of the 22 most serious COVID patients are currently being cared for there.
Come off it. It's you.
Not that it makes any difference for these people.
No restrictions.
Organisers asked these protesters to be peaceful today, although not many of them are wearing masks.
Masks don't work. Knock, knock. Anyone listening? There was a singular study out of Denmark, the Danish study as they call it, which showed that conclusively.
You can use a face mask if you like, but it is not really any protection.
And physical distancing seems to have gone out the window.
The three main things that have been introduced have been
widespread lockdowns, mask wearing and social distancing. Can that work? Different guidelines have had different views on this. Some parts of the world have said 1 meter, some parts have said 2 meters. And frankly, if you're walking 2 meters behind someone else, do you really believe that because they're wearing a mask and breathing in and out and the air is going in and out by the side of the mask, that you're not going to be breathing in huge numbers of the same air molecules and the same air particles that those people have been breathing in? When you look at the scientific evidence, there's no real world data that shows that social distancing has any effect at all.
Police are keeping an eye on the crowd, but they're doing so from a distance.
Auckland Mayor had a blunt message today.
To have a rally where people aren't following the rules.
The rules.
And where people are being told they don't need to get vaccinated, that's just straight irresponsible.
They know they can die of the vaccine. That's the problem. They know what's going on. The internet is full of these cases. Blood clots, strokes, immediate death.
An epidemiologist agrees, saying this could well become a super spreader event.
If there's anyone in that crowd who's got COVID, they're going to give it to somebody else, possibly six people, and then they're going to give it to six people. And before we know it, we're going to be back in level four.
There's vanishingly few cases, even in contact tracing, that have identified outdoor spread at all. You know, frankly, the safest place to be if you don't want COVID is outdoors.
Beyond the boundary, smaller groups gathered in Rotorua and in Wellington too. Protesters took to cities in the South Island as well, crowds turning out in Nelson and down in Christchurch. The message across the country was all the same.
We don't feel that we're being heard or the truth is coming out.
But there's no lying that today's gathering in Auckland was a blatant breach of the rules.
Civil disobedience becomes a sacred duty when the state becomes lawless or corrupt. Huh. I wonder why Martin Luther King and Gandhi would say disobedience is our duty. Maybe they're suggesting that you can't obey your way out of tyranny and that you have to disobey your way out of tyranny.
Well, Ed joins us from the Domain now, and Ed, has it settled down there at all?
Well, what a difference a few hours can make, Tom. And the only people that are here now are families out enjoying the sun. They're walking their dogs, they're riding their bikes.
Woo, I'm so glad we're free, honey.
But most importantly, everyone I've seen is wearing masks and they're all physically distanced.
Your government is in control again.
Organisers were keen to keep the peace here today, and largely it was a peaceful protest. There wasn't any violence or aggression as far as we could see, and many people just left quietly when it was all over. But it isn't all over though. Protests are planned for later again in this month in Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch.
Coronavirus once again delivers the goods on the government narrative and media spin. Biohazard bins, people, where are they? Where are the men in white hazmat suits ready to dispose of our face nappies that apparently capture all these particles that contribute to the great plague that befalls us all? There are none. Was that part of the narrative they forgot to fill in? Because that's been noticed. Why have we still got hospitals and nurses in our healthcare system? Shouldn't they all be dead? After all, coming up 2 years, they've been exposed to this deadly pandemic with all its ever-increasing contagious variants. Yet here they are, still walking around, much to the dismay of government, obviously. So what do they want to do? They want to have them jabbed. That's right. It doesn't matter you survive the apocalypse of death and destruction, but now you've got to get a jab, which will bring on that death and destruction. Well, over 172 people are now dead of that jab. And the government's doing everything to spin it otherwise. Healthcare people have been muzzled, been threatened, taken up before the medical council, who themselves should be investigated. I want to see who's on the payroll there too. I want to see the government contract that they have with Pfizer for key performance indicators to push this jab out into the people. I also want people to wonder why some in the freedom movement are advocating vaccines, advocating social distancing, advocating masks and continuing to prop up this narrative while pretending to be all about rights and freedoms. I want to ask religious leaders, while you're having testing stations pop up in your car parks, if you're trying to make a stand against this tyranny. You see, all of those things
are part of this plan to put fear into people, to make them run to the arms of government, to subjugate them, to make them bend to their will. Wake up. Two diametrically opposed ideals cannot stand or occupy the same space. Freedoms and Rights Coalition, you have a man who will not serve anyone who's not vaccinated on his business premises, yet he's one of your backers. Ask yourself a question, why? Who stands to benefit by all the shenanigans? We know that testing stations, et cetera, that pop up get $10,000 and there's $120 for a swab and $300 for a jab. It's good money. You see, crime does pay. And in this crime, it's murder, or certainly attempted murder. So I hope the Nuremberg 2.0 trials actually start in earnest very soon, because I want a lot of people who are complicit in this. And we're talking about police inhibiting your rights and freedoms of travel, of assembly, of freely giving and receiving information. All these things, the Bill of Rights, which we know is subordinate legislation, as Parliament operates under assumed parliamentary sovereignty, therefore the people be damned. You've got people positioning themselves with these groups to start up yet more political parties. And you know what's going to happen. They too are going to parrot the government line. So much controlled opposition out there. All you've got to do is wake up, share with your family and friends. I'll leave that with you while we go out on the song Hello, Hello. We played it once before. The lady responsible for this Anzac collaboration of musicians will appear on a future show. And we look forward to that. So until then, don't take the jab, and at all costs, help people avoid it. Catch you next time.
The telephone was never meant to roam. String me to the wall. Now it drags me in my car to my favorite bar, all the way to the shopping mall. Hello, hello, welcome to the new revolution. Hey ho, hey ho, looking for a new solution. The car I got, it drives itself and it gets me there on time. I wanna put my foot on the accelerator, but this thing's got its own damn mind. Yeah. Slip my seat back to relax, have a sip on my alkaline water. Do the trick, take a pic to satisfy my facial recognition. Yeah. Hello, hello, welcome to the new revolution. Let's go, let's go, let's go find a new solution. Yeah. The hackers and the ice cream stackers got their finger on the pulse. Yeah. Monitor economy and circumstance got our backs against the wall. Yeah. Hooked on currency, watch the high before oh. Heart rate jump through the blue screen of horror and your sleep deprivation goes. Hello, hello, welcome to the new revolution. Yeah. Let's go, let's go, let's go find a new solution. Socially distanced passport, masking the narrative. We're all in this together. This is now the way we live. Sign in or stay at home. We're having a test.